So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now. All right, I'm here with the champ, Brock Lesnar. First of all, Brock, congratulations. You got your revenge. Give us your thoughts on the fight.
I love it. Keep going. Keep going. I love it, man.
You were very worked up even after the fight, even after you beat Frank Mir down. You still were upset and you got in his face. Tell us why you're still upset.
Frank Mir had a horseshoe up his ass. I told him that a year ago. I pulled that sumbitch out and I beat him over the head with it. Woo!
All right, now, you don't like promoting fights very much. You don't like talking trash. You just like going there and getting the job done. You did it. You got it done tonight. You've only had 5 MMA fights ever, and you've already avenged your one loss. Give us your thoughts about your future and what you expect next as a challenge to your title.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to go home tonight. I'm going to sit down with my friends and family. And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight. See y'all later.
Brock Lesnar, ladies and gentlemen.
So the only thing that matters is you can always count on me. Cause you know I keep it 100 and I have done right from the start. This time around I won't let you down, cause you are now a part of me. And that's cause I was built for this. So forget about my previous. When I say I'm being serious, I'm too real for this. I feel too hard to tell everyone, as if I'll ever find anyone as good as he.
It is Review Away. I am John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting.
Yeah, we're here. We're in Las Vegas.
We are. You know what you call someone from this city who doesn't eat meat?
Yeah, okay, you tell me.
A Las Vegan.
Yeah, okay.
We arrived on Monday night, and now we're reviewing UFC 100
yeah.
from its site. We're just a few blocks away from the site of UFC 100. A couple blocks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, sorry, you're going to get me confused with all these numbers, man. I mean, I guess these would be the easier ones. It's not like 174 and, you know.
A Canadian event.
Oh, wow. Damn, look at you. Man, I think we're also impressed by John's ability to recount wrestling event dates. We haven't even scratched the surface on his MMA event recall. Like... Do you know the main events of a particular UFC number?
Yeah.
I said it?
If you told me.
All right, let's do this.
Oh, okay.
This is completely unrehearsed, unscripted. This is live, and this is raw right here. The John Pollock UFC number quiz. Tell me the main event of UFC 148.
UFC 148 was Silva Sonnen 2.
Amazing. Okay. Can you do, like, are we talking, like, even the one prior, before 100? You can?
Let's find out. Maybe I'll be wrong.
Pre-Zuffa era? Okay. Tell me the main event. Okay. Maybe the event title. Okay. At least.
The title. Titles are tough. Okay, whatever. Let's try them. Let's try them.
Okay. UFC 23.
Oh boy, UFC 23.
Or you can give me the main event if you know that. But it's probably not. It's not necessarily a headlining one. More of a...
Let's go. Let's say it was UFC 23 would have been...
Would you like a hint?
Well, I know it would have been in 1999, correct?
Yes.
I'm going to go Shamrock and Tito. No.
Mm-mm. It was a tournament.
It was a tournament. All right, give me the what was the final fight on the card?
Oh, wait, maybe it wasn't a tournament.
Yeah, I think they were done the tournaments.
Final fight on the card was...
Guy Mezger and Tito Ortiz.
No. Kevin Randleman...
Boss Rutten?
versus Pete Williams.
Oh, and Pete Williams.
This was Ultimate Japan. So so I guess we've ruined the gimmick.
You went deep. You went deep.
Okay. I'll go.
You went to the era where we didn't even get the UFC events in Canada.
I really went too far. Okay, wait. Give me the main event of UFC 68.
UFC 68 would have been the... it was March of 2007, and it was...
I don't know how you know that, but yeah.
Rich Franklin was on the card. Matt Hughes was on the card. They were all coming off of losses.
Okay, yes, true.
The headliner was Randy Couture and Tim Sylvia.
Very impressive. Okay, let's do one more, and then I think people are sick of this. But by the way, if you're a non-MMA fan listening to this, you turn this off.
The Uprising, by the way.
Yes.
March of 2007.
Let me think of a random number. 170. Okay, wait. 130.
UFC 130 was in May of 2011, featuring a pretty terrible card, which was Quentin Jackson against Matt Hamill.
Wow.
And also featured Brian Stann and Chris Lieben, and you and I did not see that card because we were in Nunavut.
Did you say Brian Stann and Chris Lieben?
Am I mistaken?
Half of that was right.
It was... Okay, what was the Brian Stann fight? Was Brian Stann not on that?
George
it
Santiago.
It was Memorial Day. Oh, it was George Santiago.
But nonetheless, very impressive. Wow.
Got the main fight.
Yeah,
right.
and you got the date, too, so... Well, amazing, so, man. I don't know how.
Well, mixed results there.
Mixed martial results.
How was your... I haven't talked to you all week long... Mm-hmm. On our trip, we saved it for this show.
Yeah.
How was your Canada Day
great
long weekend?
Great job by Jason Agnew, by the way, on Review Raw.
Yeah, he got through all of it.
Yep.
Vicky Guerrero.
Some great stories.
Mm-hmm.
Vicky Guerrero, yeah. That was really cool.
I mean, I haven't seen Raw, but I guess that would be the general manager showing
up
it? When they said a former SmackDown GM.
That's a good guess. You can predict the past and the future.
I'm very talented.
Yeah.
But yes, a great job.
Yep.
And now you and I are back for this show. But Canada Day weekend, did you do anything special?
I went up to Georgina. I went up to my friend rented a campground, and I'm not really the camping type at all. So we just went for the day, hung out on the beach. I ended up falling asleep on the beach. So
oh God!
I had you can't really see it, but it was a lot worse the day of, where I basically
I can see it now.
I look like Two-Face. So I had half of my face was burnt.
How was half?
Because when I sleep, I turn my head to the side.
Holy shit.
I also, it got really windy that day, so I just covered myself with a blanket. So across my chest is this line.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Dude, I got so sunburnt at this cottage I was at.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can... This is great audio, by the way. And I was barely outside for all that long. I put sunscreen on.
John is a nice pink.
Right? Oh, I got... I'm not my gimmicky, pasty white self.
Well, after this, you're going to end up with a nice tan.
Yeah, I was also wearing a t-shirt, so it was not exactly well-proportioned. But the highlight way was I'm sitting on the beach. I'm 3 hours west of Toronto, so really in the middle of nowhere. And this dude comes up to me on the beach with his beer. He's like, John Pollock?
Oh, my God.
I was like, yeah, man. How's it going? Whoa. Mini celebrity here. I was like, buddy,
oh,
mini.
Man.
And I chatted with this guy for the next half hour. He was a Fight Network super fan.
Oh, my God.
He watches everything. He told me about forums he posts on, about every fight.
Just a big nerd.
He was, we just chatted and chatted, and my friends were very amused by this.
Wow.
And then they were man, does this happen to you a lot? I was like, never. This
wow.
actually never Amazing. Happens.
Actually, I'll tell you what else I did this week. I saw one Ahmad Butt.
I did, too. You and I both hung out with Ahmad on separate nights.
On separate occasions.
It was we're divorced.
Yeah, John and I just, we don't like hanging out with, yeah, exactly, and Ahmad's our
Well, child. Actually, actually, I heard through this person that you had a certain stipulation when hanging out with a mod. The initials being NWA.
NWO.
Well, I heard no whites allowed.
Oh, I said non-whites only.
Oh. Oh, I get, yeah. Okay. Well, I guess both have the same message.
Yeah, anyway, it was you calling me out like this on the public airwaves, that was meant for a private text.
Man. Well, there's nothing private. Because anyway. Ahmad shared that with me, actually. Well, so Ahmad, blame him.
I blame you for sure.
He was a bleak.
Well, I'll tell you, Ahmad and I have a very, he's the master of the dark tweets. He's a very dark man. Literally and I guess mentally, he's a very dark man. And so when John couldn't make it, that was my only response, yes. But, of course, always a good time, seeing our friend, one of our very first supporters, who also happened to be, celebrating a birthday the week prior. And so, being the nice guy, I was like, oh, this guy's in my city. I'm going to treat him to dinner. So I get out of the car. And I'm like, oh, Ahmad, just wait one second. I forgot my wallet. So I go back to my car, and I can't find my wallet.
Oh, my God. You forget your wallet.
I'm very forgetful.
I won't say regular basis, but you're definitely, of the people I know, no one ever forgets their wallet except you.
I'm very forgetful these days. Because it's bulky, so I like to not put it in my pants. Anyway, so I can't find my wallet, but then I immediately remember, oh, I must have left it in my bag at home. So then I had to ask this guy to basically pay for me.
Wow.
As he's visiting my city and also after a birthday. So anyway, I owe you one.
Aren't you a guest?
Actually, he told me as long as I mention him on this podcast, I don't have to owe him. So.
Yeah, I went out with him the night prior, I believe, to you, and I told Ahmad, I'm like, what do you feel like eating? And he's like, well, just not anything Asian because I just had that for lunch and I'm going out with Wei tomorrow night. So he said it like twice about like feeling like you'll definitely be having Asian food with Wei. I was like, you know what? Wei's got a very wide variety when it comes to his palate. He's not tied to taking you to, an Asian.
It was not discussed
diner.
At all. In fact, we didn't even know what we were gonna eat. However, we did end up eating Korean by my suggestion. So,
maybe he was right then.
He did assume right. Yeah.
Oh well, him and I went to a bar and had average food.
Great.
But it was great to catch up with an OG listener of Review Away, Ahmad. Mm-hmm. As we are going to get into now, UFC 100 to coincide with this Saturday's UFC 200 card. Do you know that this Saturday is actually something like the UFC's 363rd card?
Like including all the fight nights.
Including everything, yes.
How about just including the...
Not even the numbered events. It's not even the 200 because 151 was canceled and then 176 was canceled. So those are just empty ones. There was also 37.5. So this would actually be the 199th numbered event.
So 201.
So UFC 200 bullshit is what the poster should say. Oh, we should be celebrating the 200 numbered events for Tyron Woodley against Robbie Lawler on July 30th. Atlanta is getting the official 200 numbered event.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of comic book numbering. Comic books have obviously been there are runs that have existed, very, very for a long, long time, and so we're up to like 900 something now, and comic book companies have, in fact, recently just done away with numbering in general, and instead would like release maybe a number one issue once a year now, and just they don't do the 970 whatever.
Do they use play buttons and stars?
No, they haven't gone that far yet. That'd be a nightmare to sort out, but they will go back to a nice round number as a promotional tactic.
Oh.
So I imagine that maybe the UFC at some point, when we get to UFC 975, maybe we might no longer have numbers.
People have been saying that forever. I remember, pre-100, everyone would say, it's going to sound ridiculous when we're saying UFC 123. And at that time, when you were in the 60s and 70s, that was a topic that would always come up. And Dana would always say he wanted to get away from the numbers. They just wanted to promote, you know, fight. Like, hey, yeah. Sylvia versus Couture. UFC 100, I think, should have ended that forever. Because there was money to be made off these significantly numbered events. 100 gave this a big boost, just as 200 is. 200 became a thing before a fight was even announced.
Absolutely. And that
I don't think they should ever get rid of numbers.
Well, it goes back to the comic book thing, where you essentially kind of do whatever you want with the numbers, but when you get to the nice round numbers, like, for instance, the comic books will, for instance, release a new number one right now, but when December hits and the issue that's currently number 5 is actually in reality number 700, they will call that 700. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe they will. Maybe if the UFC gets sold, it'll be a new universe way.
Yeah.
We'll go back to, we'll have a new name and a new numbering system.
Okay. Roman numerals. Could you imagine?
Well, that's how they started out, and then they...
Oh, no.
I guess the Roman numerals get a little complex once you're going
200
into the hundreds.
200 would be easy, but...
What is 200?
199? CC.
CC?
Yeah.
See, I see that. I would just think, oh, it's closed captioned.
UFCCC.
UFCCC. UFC3. UFC cubed.
All right. This is a stellar review. Are we sure we don't want Jordan back for this?
It's you and I, Way. Traveling back to Saturday night, July the 11th, 2009, at the Mandalay Bay Event Center, which, now that the UFC has a third building to run in Las Vegas with the T-Mobile Arena. Which is larger. And then you have the MGM, and it seems that, like, Mandalay Bay is... I think they will still do the odd event there. But it's certainly not going to be in the rotation like it once was. Right. MGM is bigger than Mandalay Bay. I mean, this was... They announced a crowd of 10,871 and a paid attendance of 9,793. So, not a gigantic setup.
10,000 is the max at the...
Like, this is what a typical Raw does.
Right.
Each Monday night.
But at
ridiculously higher prices.
Yeah, we're not necessarily...
$5.1 million gate.
There's a reason why they'd probably rather do a show there than, say, a larger arena somewhere else in a smaller town.
Mm-hmm. We had the old Gladiator Open.
Oh, yeah.
You love this or hate this? There was no in-between.
With so much of the UFC's production, I think they've kept so much... from the past, whether it be for tradition or just whatever, that same song. Oh my God.
Are you not a fan of Face the Pain by Stem?
Is it Stem?
It is Stem.
Okay. Yeah. We're very familiar with Stem, of course. The Fight Network, used to have all Stem songs for our branding. So, you know, at this point...
Who were paid with a case of beer to do all of those IDs.
Is that true?
IDs, yep.
Yes. Not for the song.
Not for the song, I don't
think. To do the, you know, coming up next and all that, yeah. But I think at this point, it'd be weird not to have it. At the same time, I feel like a lot of that stuff is still in dire need of a refresh, especially even at 100. I think even at that point, it was already getting a little stale. But, you know, it's sort of a classic.
Do you want to hear this one set of lyrics from Face the Pain?
Yeah.
Fall, now I'm seeing red. Watch you rise, watch you fall, watch you losing control. Watch you rise, watch you fall, now I'm about to break. Fall, war inside my head. Watch you rise, watch you fall, watch you losing control. Wait, this was the song that just jumped out.
Keep going, man.
No, I'm not. That's about the highlight of this. Face this fear in front of me, a seething image of myself, so I can drift away. This is way better as beat poetry. My blood runs deep, but drains from me. A soldier's heart repairs itself, so I can slip away and fall.
Next.
This is an awful song, and how it has lasted the test of time is just a commitment by this company and their image. And believe me, when it comes to this stuff, you think Vince McMahon is a micromanager? That is Dana White. Mm-hmm. He loves this song. And when they tried a remix of this on one particular event last year, I think it was 189 when they introduced all the new graphics. God, did that remix... People thought they hated Face the Pain more than anything. Yeah. Turns out a remix of the song was even worse.
Yeah, I guess they tried to update it while maintaining that
same It's hard thing. To update the outdated.
Yeah, and I imagine, you know, I don't know if it was this song that kind of influenced the new metal association with MMA, or if MMA just simply, you know, was tied to kind of like douchebaggy new metal. For in general,
this song was made for the Just Bleed guy.
Sure, yes, Affliction wearing it all ties in. Oh. Yeah,
are we in a better place image wise?
Not necessarily
than we were in 2009 at the height of Affliction.
I don't know. I don't see people wearing Reebok. I mean, at least you know, I don't think people are really wearing Affliction anymore. I don't know. I don't know. It's not a fashion, you know, fashion capital.
We had comments from all the main players on the main card. Dan Henderson, Michael Bisping, George St. Pierre, Tiago Alves, Brock Lesnar, and the man who had the best promos going into this, Frank Mir.
Mm-hmm.
He was outstanding. Mir hopes that Lesnar is taking this seriously, says he's going to send a lot of people home disappointed tonight. And Lesnar responds by saying, "I'm the UFC heavyweight champion. Enough said." And then we go into Face the Pain. And Mike Goldberg and Joe Rogan are calling this event and stating that it is a celebration of everything the UFC has become. They go over Chuck Liddell being inducted into the Hall of Fame that weekend. And then they discuss Mir Lesnar 1, as well as the welterweight title fight. And that Tiago Alves, who will be fighting for the 170-pound championship, will go into the cage at around 200 pounds tonight. While St. Pierre will be around 185.
Man, that's crazy. Crazy weight cut.
Do you want me to quickly go through the prelims
before
we go into the main card? I did watch the prelims because I think they are noteworthy because of who was on it. We won't spend too much time on these prelims, but the first fight of the night at UFC 100 saw Shannon Gougerty submit Matt Grice with a guillotine. Matt Grice, of course, is the police officer out of Oklahoma City who was involved in that horrific car accident back in 2013 and had a significant brain injury. So had to retire after that. He was submitted here with an arm-in guillotine after Gougerty switched his grip and then mounted Grice, who just went out cold, which was the exact same finish as we got in the second fight of the night, pretty much, as Tom Lawler took on C.B. Dalloway, our pal Tom Lawler.
Yeah.
Yes.
Filthy Four.
Yes. Tom Lawler, coming off of the Ultimate Fighter Season 8, was fighting here at 185 pounds against C.B. Dalloway, who was on Season 7 of the Ultimate Fighter.
What was his entrance?
You know what? The funniest part about this, he came out to Baja Men, who let the dogs out because you had the Doberman here, C.B. Dalloway. And they edited off the entrances for these two on the prelims.
Because of the musical, right?
But there were others that they didn't edit the entrances off. And it's interesting to watch that because I watched this on Fight Pass.
Yeah.
You did not, right?
I did.
Okay, you did.
I watched a version of it, yeah.
Okay, so what they do on Fight Pass is they do put production music over top the commercial song.
Like the WWE does with ECW shows.
But they don't kill the audio in the arena, so you can still hear the song in the background. It's not dead.
You can faintly hear it. Basically, they do...
They skirt around whatever legalities there are.
I mean, I'm sure they would if they were able to. I just don't think their audio people are as good as the WWE's.
Well, I thought these entrances actually sounded better because it didn't sound so blatant. I think it's such a disconnect when you totally kill and put in fake crowd noise.
Yes.
To replace authentic crowd noise. I didn't find it as jarring here as I do on like an ECW show.
From a production standpoint, I guess it's less clean and you know, probably only due to the limitations of the production. But so do you know what his he came out to? Do you know what his weigh-in thing was?
He came as the Just Bleed guy.
Oh,
he had Just Bleed written in white on his chest, and so Tom Lawler submits him in 55 seconds. Dalloway shot for the takedown right into a guillotine, and it's Lawler who has to tell Eve Levine that CB is out. He is out cold from this guillotine, and so we had pretty much similar finishes in the first two fights, and then the best part was Rogan interviewing Tom Lawler after the fight, and Rogan was asking him what's next for him, He says he wants to call out the winner of Brock Lesnar and Frank Mir. And then after that fight, he's going to cut down to 170 to fight the winner of George St. Pierre or Thiago Alves. And then after that, he's going to the WEC. So he's going to cut down to an even lower weight class.
And then he's going to do wrestling podcasts.
The cut was all right. I'm actually planning on going up to heavyweight and either calling out Brock Lesnar or Frank Mir after this. Then I'm going to go down to 170 and call out GSP or Alves. And then I think maybe WEC after.
All right, well, let's take a look real quick at the video and look at the guillotine. You got him with a nice arm in guillotine. Is this something that you practice all the time?
No.
Rogan no-sells all of this and just moves on, asking him about the guillotine and the, and if this is something that he has worked on in training, and Lawler responded, no. It was just great as he then watched the replay here. I think Rogan was not playing Gene Okerlund to Tom Lawler's Hulk Hogan.
No,
here.
Let me make the jokes.
TJ Grant, Canadian TJ Grant, took on Dongyun Kim at 170 pounds. Kim largely controlled this fight for three rounds, getting on top, using his judo, and Grant was just forced to fight off his back throughout this. I thought the second was a 10-8 round. In between the second and third rounds, TJ Grant's coach, Scott McLean, told him, quote, "You have got to pick it the fuck up with this guy," end quote. And Rogan was very critical of Grant's game plan, trying to take him down in the third because he needed a finish. The 10-8 in the second, by the way, was a point deduction as well because Grant landed an illegal upkick. Kim won the third round as well, 30-26 across the board. And TJ Grant would stick around at 170, but he'd have his best success at 155 and was set to get a title fight against Benson Henderson when he suffered his concussion in 2013 and has not fought since in 3 years. Jim Miller, who will be on the UFC 200 card, he took on Mac Danzig at 155 pounds, a young Jim Miller who looked pretty similar to Jim Miller of today. I mean, this guy's not aged too much in 7 years, which is noteworthy considering his style. But Miller got the takedown in the first round, cut up Danzig. This is it was mainly Mac Danzig and Stefan Bonner whose DNA you saw all over the octagon during the main card. Danzig was sliced open in the first. Then in the second, Miller continued to take him down. Danzig, unsuccessful, trying for a Kimura off his back. Rogan explained that you start to feel weak after you donate blood, to make a correlation here to what Mac Danzig's going through, and then suggests that that's why they offer you cookies in the office after you donate blood to help your blood sugar levels. So I guess he was suggesting that Mac Danzig could use some cookies right now because he's losing so much blood. He did not get any cookies, and he dropped the third round as well, and Jim Miller won a unanimous decision. But good to know. Yeah. If you donate blood, have a cookie after.
If you're a corner man, just get those Oreos ready.
Then we had, in light heavyweight action, John Jones, an 8-0 prospect at the age of 21, taking on Jake O'Brien. Mike Goldberg said, two young fighters that could have a long and prosperous future. Half right. Lots of kicks from Jones. Landed a big body kick. In the second, he hit the spinning elbow that cut open Jake O'Brien, and then Jones locked in this choke. It was this modified guillotine that Rogan called a no-arm Darce choke that Wei's going to have to teach me. And John Jones submitted him at 243 of the second round. I don't know if Jones was just exhausted after this fight or just overcome with emotion, but he sounded like he was on the verge of tears being interviewed by Joe Rogan. I mean, he didn't even sound like John Jones.
Yeah, you know, really, I was just striving to be a better wrestler than Jake. And I worked a lot on my takedown defense, and we came through with a win, so I just feel great, you know?
In this interview, a very, what appeared to be shy, 21-year-old John Jones, who would, I guess, come out of his shell in years later.
Yeah, John Jones before all the controversy, before all the fame, and he will be headlining UFC 200.
What a story. And then the final prelim bout. This was back when Spike didn't air the prelims. This was before Facebook. So the prelims were largely a live event draw for those to buy tickets or for the DVDs because they put all the fights on DVD. That was your way to see these fights.
Or as filler in between.
Yeah, if you needed it for the main card, which we did not get. But we did get a swing bout on the main card, interestingly enough. Oh. But this last prelim bout was Mark Coleman taking on Stefan Bonner, who on Fight Pass is listed as Stephen Bonner. This was at 205 pounds, and this was after Coleman had already been inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame and was coming off this performance against Mauricio Shogun Hua, where Mark Coleman, I was concerned he was going to have a heart attack in that fight in January. He was so exhausted, but trained really hard for this fight. He was training with Sean Tompkins. He also had Phil Baroni in his corner, who looked so excited to be in this corner. And he spent 60 days away from his family, left Columbus, and was training in Las Vegas. First round, saw Bonner with this wide karate stance, and Coleman just took him down immediately, had him in half guard. Bonner got out from under and was landing elbows to the side of Coleman's head and cut Coleman. Bonner won the first round. Then Bonner stuns Coleman with a left in the second round, but Coleman takes him down during this spinning back fist attempt, which Bonner completely whiffed on and paid for it by being put on his back. And Coleman did more damage in this round. It was even going into the third. Bonner defended the takedown. He was pressed against the cage. Coleman eventually did take him down, and it was largely the final minute where Coleman was just doing more damage. The crowd was chanting for him, and I had it 29-28 for Coleman, as did all three judges, and this was quite the emotional victory for Mark Coleman. Baroni was crying after this match, and Coleman was saying hi to his daughters in the camera, so a feel-good win for Mark Coleman here on the undercard of UFC 100, and that takes us into the main card. And we start things off with what would be the fight of the night, Yoshihiro Akiyama against Alan Belcher. And, Wade, what did you think when we talk about production, the English dubbing for Yoshihiro Akiyama in this pre-fight video?
I didn't watch it.
Okay. Goldberg said, "Let's do this thing," as Alan Belcher came out with that awful Johnny Cash tattoo on his left arm. And what was funny was he has this Johnny Cash tattoo. The song he came out to, though, Bob Dylan.
Oh.
Pretty inconsistent.
I mean, be a little one-dimensional.
However, Akiyama came out to "It's Time to Say Goodbye" by Sarah Brightman. This guy, great entrance. Always had a great entrance.
Is Sarah Brightman the original? Was that the version he had?
This was the version he came out to.
Oh, okay. Cool. And what was the dubbed over version?
Oh, I don't know. I just looked up their entrances.
Yeah. It'd be funny if it was like a rock song.
Should have Shazammed this.
Yeah.
Rogan said he will not refer to Akiyama as Sexyama. He's drawing the line. Mm-hmm. Goldberg explains how Akiyama had a bad guy image when he fought Kazushi Sakuraba, but does not explain why, because there were cameras backstage in the locker room that caught him greasing ahead of that fight. I guess that was not part of the storyline going into this fight. And Belcher was training with Rufus Sport at this time, so he had Duke and Rich Clemente in his corner, which is the same camp CM Punk trains at now.
So there's a lot about the amount of hype surrounding Yoshihiro Akiyama to have his debut fight be on the main card.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of interesting to compare cards as well. I mean, what, you know, a Shannon Gugerty and Matt Grice at the time. I mean, look, compare the two cards now. You have Jim Miller and Takanori Gomi now in the opener this coming Saturday. So first round, Akiyama was throwing a lot of head kicks early. Belcher kicked him low. And Rogan, if there's, you know, this guy gets a lot of praise for his ability to call grappling techniques and transitions. He also has an incredible eye for low blows and being able to decipher them, and states, "That one must have been bad. He's crawling." So a very low blow here.
And he would always go on a big rant about how cups,
Diamond MMA cups,
how cups need to be fixed.
Yeah.
And I imagine they still haven't been fixed.
He also, the conspiracy theorist in him always comes out during the slow motion replays of the low blow, because he always goes into it with the assumption he might be faking it. And like 99% of the time, I don't think he's ever got anything to base on a guy faking a low blow. But nonetheless, he is quite the analyst when it comes to low blows. Of course it is. Yeah. I mean, if you can get away with it, get a recovery period that maybe is not warranted, go for it. Anyway, Akiyama recovers. It's restarted. Belcher dropped him with a left hand. Akiyama came back with a kick to the body and a right hand combination. Big exchange at the end with both landing, and Akiyama took a lead kick and threw a right to take down Belcher. I thought this was a very close round. Did you score this for Akiyama or Belcher?
I thought Belcher started out really well, but I thought Akiyama ended nicely, but I would still give it to Belcher 10-9, but it ended up being much more even.
I scored it for Belcher as well. I thought this was the closest of the two three rounds.
Yeah, you know, looking at the two, Belcher is certainly a lot taller. Looked a lot longer as well, so how much does he cut versus how much does Akiyama cut?
Akiyama cuts nothing. They went over this as well, because in Japanese mixed martial arts, it was very much you fight at your walk-around weight. You don't cut much weight. Mm-hmm. Even with wrestling as popular as it is in Japan, weight cutting is not as embedded in fighters as it is here in the U.S. So they were explaining this, how, you know, Akiyama could probably fight at 170 pounds. That would be a better weight class for him, and he would eventually go down to, but it would take a while. And so Belcher was just naturally bigger. Mm. Second round, Akiyama got a takedown, and Belcher switched, got on top, and Akiyama then eventually got into side control. Akiyama also sponsored by the Fight Mafia and Mad Muscle, a bygone era in advertising for UFC fighters. Belcher put Akiyama into his guard, and then Akiyama was landing strikes on top. They got back up. Belcher here, as he was just, his hair was flying all over the place. This dude was starting to resemble Dean Ambrose, I felt. If you go back and look at these two.
Oh, that's racist, man.
No, it is not. They look similar. That's a fact. Belcher hit a pair of leg strikes. Akiyama landed a right hand. I scored the second round for Akiyama.
Yeah, actually, no, I scored it for Belcher. I thought he ended the round stronger, landed more, especially the leg kicks. But Akiyama, you know, had top control, landed good strikes from the top, but I would still give it 10-9 Belcher.
And then we go to the third round, and you can see that Akiyama's left leg has been affected by all of these kicks from Belcher throughout the fight. His left eye was also shut. Akiyama was landing a number of right hands. Belcher came back with body shots. Belcher was very heavy on his jab here and using leg kicks as well. Belcher used the cage for a Superman punch, and then at the end, Akiyama got a takedown, and Belcher just exploded to get up before the fight ended. I gave the third round to Belcher. I was pretty comfortable in that round the most of the three, so I had a 29-28 for Belcher. How did you score this opening fight on the main card?
I scored it 30-27, Belcher.
So you must have been irate here at the reading of the... First of all, when you were watching this, I mean, outside of the main fights, mm-hmm. did you even recall who had won this fight? Were you in suspense here as the cards were being read?
No, outside of the main event, and obviously the GSP fight and Dan Henderson, outside of the top three fights, I really forgot the result of most of these fights. So, absolutely, I was surprised by this decision.
Well, Judge Adelaide Byrd scored at 30-27, Akiyama. Douglas Crosby scored at 29-28 for Belcher. And Patricia Morse-Jorman had it 29-28 for Yoshihiro Akiyama, the winner by split decision.
Yeah, and I think a little fitting that one of the most important cards in the UFC's history starts off with one of these seemingly very commonplace robbery decisions. I think this is kind of like their version of the screwjob finish.
Wow. So and you were as hot as Joe Rogan, who flat out said Belcher got robbed. I didn't think it was a robbery. So. I thought it was close.
Well, I had a 30-27 Belcher, so you know I really didn't understand at all how Akiyama got some of those rounds. And I don't know if it was the takedowns that he scored or maybe just from somehow from the judge's angle instead of watching from the TV, but from their angle, the fight looked different. I don't know.
Then we went to Dan Henderson and Michael Bisping. These two had just come off season 9 of The Ultimate Fighter, the U.S. versus U.K. season, which had produced two winners.
That's interesting, because on the version I watched, the swing bout took place here, so I guess they swapped order.
Well, this was the pay-per-view order, because on the pay-per-view that night, the final fight everyone saw was John Fitch and Paulo Thiago. So Dan Henderson and Michael Bisping here. At 185 pounds, the season 9, that was the season where Ross Pearson, who is fighting on Friday night against Will Brooks, and James Wilkes, who does not fight any longer. They had won the lightweight and welterweight contracts. And then the pre-fight video, this was awesome. Did you watch this pre-fight video?
Yes.
Dana White was stating how Michael Bisping is better than people give him credit for. The current middleweight champion. The best part, though, was the fact that Michael Bisping, who is now an analyst on a major sports network in the United States was subtitled here.
Yeah. I remember that causing quite a bit of controversy.
And Rogan stating, it's so hard to understand him. He's like a character from a Guy Ritchie movie. I was like, is he that hard to understand?
Justifying the subtitles, yes.
I had no problem understanding this man.
If he takes me lightly, that'll be his biggest mistake. I definitely started to get to him as the show progressed.
At all.
Yeah. I suppose, you know, I don't know. I think a lot of this stuff people will excuse saying, you know, there's a lot of people watching this that might not be used to a British accent. Certainly, you know, you and I watching some of that ICW, I actually could have benefited from subtitling. But, I mean, you know, a standard British accent, I didn't really have that much difficulty understanding it, you know? And I feel like in the future they probably haven't subtitled English accents.
If Michael Bisping is in Las Vegas this week, I'm going to track him down and ask him about being subtitled. And I think when we post the interview, you should subtitle his answer. That's our goal for this week.
All right.
Let's come up with unique interviews instead of...
I know some people at the final who would be very upset at you, but sure.
We're here for our amusement, Wade.
Yeah.
So Henderson and Bisping. Bisping came out to Song 2 and Henderson to Lunatic Fringe by Red Rider, all edited off Fight Pass. And Bisping had just been voted the coolest man in the UK in 2008.
I think he was top, like one of them, not the coolest.
Oh, not the coolest.
No.
Okay.
No.
I thought it was a stretch.
He was like 19 or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Henderson was 38 years of age at this time. And here we are, 7 years later, Wei, and we're talking about these two possibly fighting for the middleweight title. And it's based off of this fight.
It's amazing. Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, never in a million years would I have predicted that. Henderson is throwing these big rights early on and missing. A lot of power behind his shots.
From the beginning of this fight, you knew exactly what Dan was looking for. He was as open and honest about it and didn't really try to hide it at all.
Mike Goldberg was stating that he loved it when Dan Henderson called Michael Bisping a douchebag during this season of The Ultimate Fighter. Henderson, also pre-Reebok era, his main sponsor on his shorts, ExtremeYogurt.com, with an X.
Wow.
Henderson was just doing really well with his striking, and Bisping was largely just trying to avoid the strikes. Henderson definitely won the first round.
Immediately, you could see where this fight was headed, because Dan, all he was doing was looking for the right hand, and Bisping just looked incredibly... I mean, Robin Black would do a much better job of explaining this than I, but... As Bisping resorted to his corner, his cornermen were just yelling at him.
You're walking right onto the backhand, mate. Get off his backhand. He's absolutely pathetic.
Calm down. Moving to the right. Move to the right, Mike. Okay, listen.
Okay, listen up.
To not, fucking pathetic.
To not circle to his left, which was in direct opening to Dan's right hand. But I guess it was something Bisping did naturally.
It definitely was. And Dan Henderson was perfectly aware of it because Bisping continued this. He was moving on his feet and getting out of the way of shots. He did actually land a few here. But again, he kept circling. And Henderson drops Bisping with a right hook. And Bisping is out. He is down. It is the nasty plunge to the mat, and then in a follow-up that has been replayed, in a shot that the actual motion of the strike has been used by Dan Henderson for merchandise.
Oh, yeah, sure, I would. I mean, this is a meme that's, you know, it's still getting spread today.
He torpedoes Michael Bisping with this right forearm to his limp body, right to the jaw, and he got a lot of criticism for this follow-up when it was clear he was done, and I'm not a fan of these follow-up shots. It also is the ref that needs to step in.
I don't blame Dan Henderson at all. I never blame a fighter for a follow-up shot. Obviously, I give them extra credit if they can recognize somebody in the heat of the moment and not go for one, but when you're in a fight, you know, I think all bets are off. But what a horrible fight for Michael Bisping. You know,
he was going to fight Anderson Silva for the middleweight title if he had won this in the UK. That was the fight everyone was talking about if he had won this one. So this altered those plans significantly. And the guy, this was one of three times in his history where he was one fight away from getting that title shot, and against Chael Sonnen and against Vitor Belfort. He would lose that eliminator fight, essentially.
But here Dan had, you know, one of the more one-dimensional and obvious game plans that I could recall in a famous fight. And he just went out there and stubbornly executed it. And Michael Bisping, you know, despite being warned by his corner, fell right into it and couldn't help himself.
So afterwards, Rogan is with Henderson and says that the last shot was to shut him up a little, and says he usually wouldn't do that. And Rogan also notes not to sleep on Dan Henderson because he's 38. He's still very good. And he called that last right hand ruthless. And he's constantly telling us Bisping is still unconscious. He was out for a while here.
Do you think this fight, I mean, I suppose it's just Dan Henderson style, but do you think fights like this have kind of, you know, impeded Dan Henderson's perhaps development later on? Has he relied too much on the right hand in later fights?
Oh, I think later he was totally, I won't say coasting, but that was very much his game. I mean, for a guy that with that level of wrestling that doesn't incorporate that into his game, I don't know if you've ever seen that level of a wrestler that wrestling is so such a small, almost non-issue when it comes to a Dan Henderson fight. I mean, you've got that power, and I think he prefers to fight that way.
If this fight happened now, how do you think it would go?
I think this is one title defense for Michael Bisping where I would certainly favor Michael Bisping today.
Me too.
Definitely.
Especially, you know, the age, and also wanting to erase this. I'm sure he's more than prepared for Dan Henderson this time.
So if you're Dan Henderson, you do have this fight in your back pocket, this win, even 7 years ago. Given all of the contenders at 185 pounds, is this too silly a fight to make in 2016?
No, not at all.
Because this is the best story. And
I think GSP would be the best fight for Bisping.
That would be the biggest fight.
But, you know, I think this is, if you can justify it, you don't even have to justify it. Dude. You don't need to. But, you know, the fact that Dan beat him in very famous and embarrassing fashion, you know, 100 UFCs ago, and also the fact that Dan Henderson's coming off a win, I think just make it.
So that takes us to the UFC welterweight title fight. And so we should explain the John Fitch-Paulo Thiago fight. It was a swing bout, meaning they had it slotted, but it was very much a movable fight to accommodate the pay-per-view time, make sure that our key fights are all in. Essentially, John, you are not a priority on this main card.
It was the Divas match on the WrestleMania card.
It was, only if they wanted to wrap up early and put the Divas on last.
Yes.
So that's what happened. So all of these fighters, and in particular, George noted this afterwards at the press conference, that it kind of did throw him off that he was fighting earlier than he anticipated, because the Fitch fight was originally penciled in earlier in the night, and then they moved it to the end of the show.
They seem to have gotten away from the need
they don't
swing
do
bouts.
Swing bouts
and
any longer.
I wonder how they're able to time their shows better now.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting how they slot the Saturday card. I imagine it's just a longer pay-per-view window because you have three title fights, which they have not done since 2001.
Mm-hmm.
They've never kind of gambled with three title fights because that was an awful card where they did go over the pay-per-view time and it was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So here we had George St. Pierre taking on Thiago Alves, and this was after George had fought BJ Penn the second time in January earlier that year in what was a very big fight.
Destroyed him.
And Thiago Alves had won his last seven fights to get this championship bout.
It's funny because despite Alves probably weighing 200 and GSP weighing 185, I mean, they still look pretty similar in size. And GSP, in fact, he's taller than Alves, isn't he?
George is 5'10", and Alves was listed as 5'9", so slightly taller. But sometimes they tinker around with those numbers. George came out with a very young-looking Firas Sahabi, who, I mean, he was only kind of new to MMA fans at this point, identified on the air as Firas Zazabi. And also in his corner, Greg Jackson and John Donaher with hair.
Oh, yeah.
John Donaher. And Phil Nurse, so quite the lineup.
That's
a cornerman.
A Donaher with hair is a photo op that you should covet, because R.I.P. John Donaher's hair.
Yes, for those not familiar with John Donaher, I mean, first of all, a brilliant mind in mixed martial arts. One of the smartest guys from any fighters. Works with Chris Weidman.
Anything he has to say about jiu-jitsu, I always take time to listen to. He's incredible. He's a philosopher, actually.
He is. Yeah. He is. Doesn't like to lionize himself too much, but he is also synonymous with wearing a rash guard in all situations.
Or a gi, once in a while.
But mainly it's that rash guard. And it really hit home for me when I was in New York City and saw a gentleman getting off the subway with groceries in a rash guard and realizing that's John Donaher getting off at Penn Station. So
amazing.
So there we have the fight begins. We've got Steve Mazzagotti. Imagine George W. Bush had gone into mixed martial arts refereeing, you would have Steve Mazzagotti.
Wow. Okay.
You know, every ref kind of has their line to start a fight, and Steve Mazzagotti, in his accent, just would say, "Now hook him up, hook him up."
Yeah, Mazzagotti also the subject of controversy in the main event. In the prior fight with
Lesnar and Frank Mir, where Lesnar was well on his way to finishing Frank Mir, and then they got stood up for a shot to the back of the head and deducted a point from Brock. So Lesnar and his camp did not want Steve Mazzagotti again as a referee.
For wrestling fans, the Nick Patrick of the UFC.
Yeah, kind of. And Steve Mazzagotti, you will see a name that you really don't see officiating UFC fights any longer. He's kind of disappeared. So, first round, St. Pierre just gets the takedown in the first minute and puts Alves on his back, and it was just constant takedowns from St. Pierre and into half guard immediately. Alves is cut around the left eye, lots of pressure from St. Pierre, and I also noted throughout this card something that Mike Goldberg never does anymore, and I didn't even recall him doing it all that much at the time, but after each round, he would be pretty definitive in stating who won the round, who he felt won the fight, and now it's very much they just leave it to the viewer to interpret who they think won, and I'm sure that's a certain edict from above that they want to have that drama of who won it, whereas Bellator, they have Jimmy Smith scoring every round and informing the viewer what he thinks. But I found it interesting on this card, going back to watch it, how Goldberg, he would give his opinion a lot more.
That's very interesting. Good pickup.
So St. Pierre wins the first round. Second round, Rogan notes how GSP doesn't like cutting a lot of weight because it's bad for you. So talk about being ahead of the curve in 2009 when it comes to extreme weight cutting. There was a Superman punch into a leg kick, which I thought was just a great combination, and then into the takedown by St. Pierre. And Alves is bleeding from the mouth, bleeding from the nose, and St. Pierre just kind of was in his half guard throughout much of this and pressed Alves against the cage. Two rounds in here, you just felt that Alves was really having a hard time dealing with the pressure from St. Pierre and not being able to defend the takedown.
The takedown was just everything, and I felt like this was maybe one of those classic George St. Pierre, Greg Jackson fights where George was just completely dominant via those takedowns at will.
Yeah, third round, you saw St. Pierre with a combination. Again, taking him down again, it continued into the fourth. The fourth was an interesting round because there was this huge double leg takedown by St. Pierre, and then he got back on top in half guard. He mounted Alves at one point, but then moved back to half, and then he tried for this armbar, couldn't get it, and Alves then ended up on top, and Goldberg notes that it had been 2 years since St. Pierre had been on his back in a fight, and it was on his back that St. Pierre ended up injuring his abductor muscle. And
abductor.
My abductor. And George did this tremendous job blocking shots off his back, got back to his feet, and still won the round. And then in between rounds, George is telling Greg Jackson about how he thinks he's torn his groin or something. And Jackson is telling George, first of all, not to take his back. It's too risky. and tells him to forget about his groin, hit him with it. Hit him with it.
Hit him with his groin.
And man. Jackson just, that's apparently, that was his advice. Just hit him with it.
Man, Greg Jackson is really interesting.
He's the best corner guy to listen to.
To hear in corners. And I think the time where it first stood out to me was watching him on that Spike TV series.
Oh, yeah. Fight Master.
Yeah, Fight Master, where...
people hated him.
He would just, like, tell people that they were doing really well and shout loudly, almost seemingly to influence the judges that were...
Oh, that's a rep he has.
So, I imagine this was before the time where they mic'd up or had the option to get separate audio for the cornermen like they have now, like on Fight Pass.
Yeah.
You can hear the corner's audio now on Fight Pass, right? But not for this.
No.
But, he's very interesting to hear, just even in terms of a psychology level, to see how he talks to his fighters.
Hello, Mr. St. Pierre. How are we doing? I think we're doing excellent. Like, he's just, motivational.
Like, he's Mr. Speaker. Rogers.
Somewhat, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So you got brief snippets here in between rounds, between the corners.
I imagine, like, when a person is, you know, in heat like this and having fought for 20 minutes, they kind of resort to the mind of a child, and you kind of have to talk to him like that.
Yeah, he's a very interesting MMA psychologist to mm-hmm. chat with. Into the fifth, St. Pierre got the takedown. This is after the abductor injury. Got the takedown after a minute of circling. Alves is up. There was a leg kick by Alves, but that led to another takedown. That was a big thing in this fight because Thiago Alves, his leg kicks are just vicious. Uh-huh. But when he would throw those, that was the opening for St. Pierre to take him down, and it certainly made Alves hesitant throughout the fight to throw those kicks, and he just mm-hmm. became fodder here for St. Pierre. St. Pierre got his ninth takedown of the fight, finished on top in half guard. It was a dominant performance. I had George winning every round. One judge had it 50-44. The other had it 50-45. The other two.
Did you have any 10-8 rounds?
I was on the brink. I believe it was the third round. You could have gone 10-8. I don't think it was crazy to do so, but I had it 50-45.
50-45 for me as well. Just complete domination from GSP. And I think St. Pierre gets a lot of flack for not finishing guys. If he was somebody with more power, he definitely had many chances to finish, Alves in here. If you're Alves or an Alves fan, this was an incredibly frustrating fight to watch, you know, just to see a guy out there.
Reduced to so little.
Completely helpless. Couldn't use any of his tools against GSP. So, you know, great fight from GSP.
I know St. Pierre gets a lot of flack. I mean, he had not finished a guy in his entire career at this point. When he stepped away, he had not finished anyone since the BJ Penn fight in 2009. Mm-hmm. He didn't have another finish after that fight, right up until the Hendricks decision. Yeah. But I watched him. I was never bored with this guy's fight because I was watching someone dismantle some of the best guys, and it was also his ability...
Dismantle and nullify.
And also play them at their own game. Like the first Josh Koscheck fight, he out-wrestled him. In the second Matt Serra fight, he went to the ground with Matt Serra. You criticize his stand-up, he stood with Josh Koscheck in their second fight, broke his orbital bone. I mean, this was someone that, I mean, just to watch him nullify some of these guys, I found it incredible to watch, and I can understand people that criticize him, but I was always just so impressed at his ability to win five rounds over Thiago Alves in 2009.
And I'll say, like, his lack of finishing is not from a lack of trying, you know? The guy is active at all times, trying to wear down his opponent. It's just maybe a lack of power you could cite. But there's constant activity there.
So then we go into the main event of the show. Well, I guess maybe the semi-main event of the show, given the layout of these fights.
Yeah. And let me just say one more thing about GSP. I mean, because we'll probably never get to talk about him on this podcast. But, you know, for all the worry from the WWE that we can't push a top babyface who has a thick accent or can't speak, you know, perfect English. Here you have George St. Pierre, who in his post-fight interview. Not one of his more famous post-fight interviews, but still, this dude has very, very thick Quebecois accent. Yet he's the biggest babyface in the UFC, and I think, you know, his personality simply, and obviously his good looks, they trump everything. And in fact, the accent has only helped to make him a more endearing person. So I think that whole idea is very flawed.
I would agree with you. I think that when you see a babyface that connects, that's natural, there's, you know, George St. Pierre to me was also somebody that people would talk about. Oh, is this guy? This guy was one of the most charismatic people to me in the UFC.
And somebody who is seriously like a pure babyface, in that he didn't have to trash talk. He didn't have to be Chael Sonnen or Conor McGregor in order to gain his notoriety. He would just do the nice guy things, would occasionally say funny things to make you laugh, whether it be with the exit or not, but just came across as incredibly likable, incredibly dominant. And I think to me, I mean, as pure of a babyface in pro wrestling or MMA as you can really get.
Brock Lesnar and Frank Mir was next in their very highly anticipated rematch, and things just came into perfect alignment here. You always knew the rematch was something you could go back to after their February 2008 fight, and the way things turned out, where by the end of 2008, Brock had won the heavyweight title from Randy Couture, and Frank Mir defeated Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira to become the interim champion. So here we have the rematch to unify the UFC heavyweight title. It could not have been put together better. And UFC 100, you know, for all the talk of how this loaded card that set records, this fight was not even scheduled for UFC 100. It was supposed to be taking place in May at UFC 98, and Mir suffered a knee injury, and they had to postpone this to UFC 100. I mean, 100 was going to have St. Pierre and Alves and the coaches from Tough Season 9, and then Lesnar Mir got added to the card, and you just had the perfect storm with the biggest rematch the UFC maybe ever had produced, at least from a revenue standpoint it was. And UFC 100 became this larger-than-life event on top of just being 100. So part of the selling feature here for Joe Rogan was that Frank Mir is training seriously now. So that's always a positive. The pre-fight video was just great. Mir mocked the way that Lesnar tapped out in the first fight. Lesnar calls Mir lucky. He gave him the knee bar and had a momentary mistake, and that Mir is carrying around the make-believe belt, and that Frank has a horseshoe up his ass. He's going to pull it out and beat Mir with it.
And yeah, I didn't realize he said the line in the preview video, because I had always heard that line at the end of the fight.
Yes, he thinks that Mir was just lucky. And Mir says,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I wonder how much Paul Heyman influence there was in some of these lines.
I would imagine some. I would also think that that horseshoe line, that was always a joke they made about. I mean, Kurt Hennig and Lesnar were very close, along with their scuffle on a plane once. But they were very close with one another, and that was always a joke they made about Kurt Hennig having a horseshoe up his ass. Because he was always, when they do random games, that, like, this guy was just always able to, like, that Mr. Perfect gimmick was almost like a joke based on this guy just having this streak of being lucky.
Look at that Mr. Perfect tie-in.
So, anyway, Mir says he has power. Lesnar, that is, has power. But his shots aren't as effective as people think, and it's more like a little sister grabbing you by the hair, and it's annoying, his striking, more than anything. Mm. Frank Mir was so awesome as the heel. And to a lot of MMA fans, he was the babyface here, because he was representing MMA.
I really don't know if there's a clear heel or baby face. I mean, I would say, yeah, to an MMA fan, it was Frank Mir that was the baby face, and Brock Lesnar was the invading heel. But both guys, I think, really understood the game and were able to trash talk incredibly effectively to make you that much more interested.
Mir came out to Kanye West and Lesnar to Metallica. And Rogan notes that Lesnar is not only a former amateur wrestler, but also a, quote, former fake wrestler, an entertainment wrestler.
Did he say fake wrestler?
He said a former fake wrestler. Okay. Mir is also 10 pounds lighter for this fight than he was for the first fight in 2008.
What was the thinking behind that? Did they say?
They didn't really go into any theories, but I'm sure it was maybe just to have a bit more speed against Lesnar. Mm. And obviously it was something that bothered Mir, or at least something he took note of, because it was after this fight that Mir went from a fighter at 245 to 255 to a guy that would cut down to 265 for his fights, and he added all that bulk for future fights to mix success. The referee this time around was Herb Dean, and as Mir put his hands up to touch gloves at the front, Lesnar just turned his back and walked back to his corner.
Yes. Ever the showman. However, John, you neglected to mention perhaps the other most significant moment of this fight. The debut of the Buffer 360.
Michael Buffer, Bruce Buffer, introduced the Buffer 360 for this UFC 100 event. Do you want to describe this way?
Well, I guess we might have some non-MMA fans listening, but, I mean, Bruce Buffer, the announcer of the UFC, does kind of a signature, during all of his announcements, does a signature quarter turn, like... Very flashy.
Very dramatic.
Dramatic quarter turn whenever he's about to announce the name of a person in his corner. And I think occasionally he's done even a 180. So there's a great video out there put up by Joe Rogan and Brian Redband where Rogan's mission, he stated that weekend during UFC 100, was to convince Bruce Buffer to do a full 360 rotation in his announcement of the main event at UFC 100. And Buffer teased it all weekend. I might pull it out. I might do it. And there's fan footage out there, and you can see in this video too, he did the Bruce Buffer 360 for the announcement of Brock Lesnar, the UFC heavyweight champion. It was marvelous. And Joey Diaz is going nuts. Rogan's going nuts. Joe Silva's going nuts. It's crazy. Maybe we'll see it again. Maybe we'll see it at 720.
Maybe he'll stand on top of the octagon and do the Buffer 630, like Ricochet.
Land on his back?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And do a forward roll up into a 360.
I don't know if he's that athletic. I'd say, you know, he did the 360 pretty flawlessly. I think a 720, probably even too much, 540 maybe.
If you ever want to read the greatest MMA book in history, it's Bruce Buffer's book. It's time.
Are you going on the record with that statement?
It is. You know, prior at UFC 129, you know, here we are at the Rogers Center, 55,000 people, and he suffered this ankle injury, but he knew he had to do a big intro for the main event, and to read it in Bruce Buffer's words, I mean, you thought this guy was... I don't know what to equate it to.
I suffered an ankle injury, yet I had to continue on.
Well, imagine this for the whole intro of the book. How he describes how he gutted his way through to pull off the unthinkable. It's just, and the whole book is just like...
How would I walk from the cage entrance to the center?
I think I have the book here.
How would I ever walk to the center?
Do you want to hear some of it?
Not really.
Or no?
Not really, but if you have it, how could I say no? Oh, my God, you actually have it.
It's time. My 360 view of the UFC.
Oh, wow, look at that.
Let me just read an excerpt. I won't read the whole thing, okay?
Okay. Wow, how convenient.
This is... Oh, God. Okay, this is way too long. Okay. I'm skipping here to... this is just too long, I think. Anyway. I'm going to lend this to you, so you...
No, thank you.
Okay, well, there you go. I'm going to plug the book. I was very entertained by the book. That's my point.
Cool.
Anyway, we're moving on. To the main event, Mir's left leg was all taped up here. His knee, I mean, this guy...
It was taped up. Did we ever find out why?
No, I don't know.
Rogan immediately noted it and said he wasn't sure if it was due to injury or because Frank wanted more friction for his leg locks.
Yeah. Lesnar got on top early on as Mir failed to grab the leg and landed all these short elbows. He was slipping in punches with his right hand, just going to town on Frank Mir's face and trapping him. And Mir was able to improve his position to avoid some shots, but Lesnar dominated this round. I thought this was a 10-8.
You could certainly argue. I had a 10-9, but you could. In my opinion, this round was definitely more dominant than any of the GSP Alves rounds, and more worthy of a 10-8.
And more damage.
More damage, absolutely. I think immediately here you could see, Frank was kind of resorting to some of his jiu-jitsu that was so successful for him initially, but you can tell Brock also managed to study that a lot and was able to, Frank here was stuck in half guard, which is normally a very neutral defensive position in jiu-jitsu, but in MMA, if you're Frank Mir stuck in Brock Lesnar's half guard, Brock Lesnar on top of you, raining down punches, is just a terrible place to be. You might as well be in mount. So Brock in half guard here gets a headlock, which is a very unusual position of attack, but because he's so large and powerful, he's able to totally trap and nullify Frank's limbs from this position. All he needs is a free arm from the top and just destroyed him.
So we go into the second. Never good when the first piece of advice your corner gives you, which they did to Frank Mir, the advice was take in some oxygen. And his face looked like a mess here, all swollen. Second round begins, and Lesnar just sends him to the mat, but then lets Mir up. And Mir does land a knee, but then Lesnar gets on top, and he's in Mir's half guard. And the crowd is chanting, stand them up, as Lesnar is landing shots. Lesnar has him against the cage, and then he just starts raining down right hands. Mir goes out, and the fight is stopped. Brock is your winner. And then afterwards, everyone is up. Mir is being helped to his feet, where he is in another planet. And Lesnar just comes up to him after the win and just yells, talk all the shit you want now. And Mike Goldberg says that is not going to win him any fans. And Lesnar was in full promo mode for the next 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But first of all, Wade, the stoppage. And just this scene here, yeah. At Mandalay Bay.
Well, first, I mean, if you're just judging Brock as an MMA fighter, he still clearly had a lot left to be desired in terms of technique. His striking just looked pretty awful. But because the guy is so powerful, he really doesn't need perfect technique, not against a guy smaller like Frank Mir. Brock's aim, just the whole fight, just seemed to be to close the distance, to get those takedowns, and in order to do that, he had to weather some good strikes from Mir, including a big knee from Mir. But ultimately, there was no stopping for Brock's takedown. Got on top, and with Brock being as wide and as heavy as he was, he's just able to flatten Frank. And when you're, Frank Mir in half guard, flattened, you really can't use any jiu-jitsu. So Further to that, the key here from Brock was the fact that he was able to capture and trap Frank's wrist while on top, threading it behind his back, essentially putting Frank Mir in a hammer lock while he maintained top position. And with Frank being unable to protect those shots with both hands, it was over right then. So I don't know if Brock talked about ever drilling these particular positions, but or if he was making them up on the fly, but I think it just shows you how powerful he is, that he's able to make these seemingly nothing positions work for him that probably wouldn't work for most fighters.
No, but I think that if you are to envision Brock Lesnar being able to take down Mark Hunt, I mean, go back and watch the Stipe Miocic fight with Mark Hunt, where Miocic largely just was able to take Mark down and just beat the hell out of this guy round after round. And, there is definitely a way for Brock Lesnar to win this fight. This is hardly this, oh my God, how is Brock ever going to win this fight? I don't think that at all.
I'm actually picking Brock. I know he's the underdog, but I don't think it's a big stretch at all. And I think that fight really will come to whether or not Brock can take Mark Hunt down or Mark Hunt could avoid the takedown. I think standing, it's all Hunt. But you can see from a fight like this, Brock, once he has you down, a guy as big and as wide as he is, it's very tough.
Go watch. I mean, this was someone, and granted, we don't know what level his wrestling is at, that 4.5 years away. I don't think it's completely diminished. And when you see that this was a guy able to take down Frank Mir, able to take down Randy Couture, able to take down Cain Velasquez during their fight in 2010, I believe he can take down Mark Hunt. It's just the entry to try and take him down. That's going to be very dangerous when Mark Hunt is going to be ready for that takedown and ready to catch him. And it's an interesting fight and hardly not a one-sided one going into this. I don't think the lines aren't really that crazy either. They shouldn't be. They're relatively,
you know, pretty close.
So then we got into what was the most talked about event of UFC 100 for days after this, a huge controversy. It was Rogan's interview with Brock Lesnar, tons of boos for Brock, and he yells, "I love it. Keep going." And he reiterates that Frank had a horseshoe up his ass. He pulled that sumbitch out and beat him over the head with it. He was just having the greatest time of his life. He wooed. He says he's going to go home and maybe get on top of his wife tonight. And I guess there was a problem with the audio quality because the comments about Coors Light did not make it on the Fight Pass, way.
No, nope, they cut that out.
Did you happen to track down the actual speech, or did you see this edited version?
I saw another edited version.
This is an extremely hard, unedited interview to find, as I was trying to find it.
Yeah.
The UFC has erased it from history.
Yeah, they erased that. But they kept the one with getting on top of his wife, I guess.
Yeah, they found that was fine.
That's fine.
But not the Coors Light reference, which, of course, Bud Light, their major sponsor, who were... I mean, they were...
Oh, my God.
The UFC was furious about this. And this was the big discussion at the post-fight press conference where there were some people who thought this was awesome. Brock is the biggest star ever. And there were others who thought this is why this sport is never going to get to a certain level because of people like Brock Lesnar and making comments like he did afterwards. And Dana reamed out Lesnar backstage. And then they had Brock come to the presser with a Bud Light.
Yeah.
He says, "I love Bud Light," and was drinking it throughout the presser. But this was, there were people on both sides of the fence who thought this was great and this was awful.
And the controversy, I think, is the great end result of it all.
This was your biggest star. There was no question about it.
See, that amount of overreaction from people criticizing Brock for something like that is the exact type of perspective I want from a pro wrestling play-by-play babyface commentator. That type of real, like, "Oh, that's sickening. How could he say these things? He's going to ruin the integrity of this sport, of this company." That's the type of outrage I want from a fake sport.
Rogan did interview Mir, whose face was a mess. He said Lesnar did do a good job. Says he caught his wrist and just called it a dumb mistake. Says he will be back. And Rogan yells that, "Folks, we still have one more fight left." Essentially telling the crowd, "Don't leave. There's more to come. We got John Fitch and Paulo Thiago next."
It was weird when I saw the Fitch versus Thiago match first, because I thought that was almost a prelim bout because of how quiet and how emptier this arena felt.
Well, Fitch and Thiago came out in the death spot of the show, and, man, they did not have a great fight. Fitch was able to just take down Thiago, and Thiago was moving to a Darce choke at one point and ended up with Fitch moving and throwing elbows to the side of the head. Thiago held on to his leg, but it was this guillotine that Thiago nearly got, and Fitch just defended. I did give the first round to Thiago. The second round, Fitch landed a right, got on top, moved to the back of Thiago, got a slam takedown, controlled the back with one hook in. And then in the third, there was a combination thrown by Fitch. He got a takedown off the fence. He mounted Thiago at one point. They got back up on their feet, and Thiago got to his back. Fitch got to his back, took the back with his hooks in, went for a body triangle, a neck crank, and Fitch was mixing in shots and really dominated the final minute. I had a 29-28 for Fitch. The scores were 30-27 and a pair of 29-28. So John Fitch wins and avenges the loss of his teammate Josh Koscheck, who got upset by Paulo Thiago in Thiago's UFC debut earlier that year in February. And the crowd was just silent throughout these 15 minutes.
Yeah, you know, I added 29-28 for Fitch as well. Not as crowd-pleasing of a fight. Probably, you know, the worst fight on the show, you could say. But a very good performance from John Fitch, nonetheless. Pretty simple and effective game plan, taking down Paulo Thiago, who didn't have much of an answer for Fitch's wrestling. Nor did he display any stand-up as well.
And we went from the most controversial post-fight interview to the safest post-fight interview of the night. As Fitch said, he had to wait around in the locker room, not sure when he was going to be fighting. He said originally he was going to fight before St. Pierre and Alves, and said, I come in and play it by ear. And thanks Zinkin Entertainment, and notes this is his 10th win in the UFC, and plugs his after party. And that ended UFC 100, the unofficial main event. And I always recall John Fitch was a guy that, not known for having the most dynamic personality in the sport in 2009, but I always remember trying to get a liner from him for Fight Network Radio, and he did one, and we had him redo it, I feel. I was just like, yeah, it's just, you just gotta say your name, you're listening to Fight Network Radio, something like that, and then he did it, something was wrong with it, so I asked him to do it again, and he's like, okay, I'll do something different, and then out of nowhere, this is John Fitch, bitch, and you're listening to Fight Network Radio. It's like, where the hell did that come from?
I think he's done it before. He did it for a Fight Network ID as well.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of
on
then.
On camera.
Oh, okay.
Oh, on video.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Maybe it was for that and not Fight Network Radio,
right?
As I think of it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, anyway.
So that was the most personality you've ever seen out of John.
Well, he's actually very much come out of that shell to a degree.
And again, like, he's here's a guy who's an athlete.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
He's not a Brock Lesnar. He didn't have that, you know, awareness or training or years of experience speaking in front of a camera. He's just a normal guy who loves to fight, loves to train, loves to, you know, just do his sport. And you know, you kind of feel for guys like that who aren't naturally predisposed to you know, being interesting in front of a camera.
So, Wei, on a scale of 1 to 100.
Oh, my God.
Where do you put UFC 100?
Certainly not the best UFC ever, but, I mean, a very solid and entertaining main event. You know, St. Pierre fight, I can't say I really enjoyed watching. I mean, yeah, it was a very dominant performance, but is it a fight I was happy to go back to watch 25 minutes of? Not necessarily, you know. Dan Henderson, Michael Bisping, a classic fight that was a lot of fun to watch with a very brutal finish. And Akiyama Belcher was good, but again, not necessarily a fight that I would go back to watch. So I gave this show maybe a 67 out of 100.
67 out of 100. All right. Yeah. I'll go 60. In terms of a fight card, that's where I rank it. In terms of business, though, this is the most purchased event in UFC history. Will it be broken by UFC 200, Wei?
Sorry, what was the number?
1.6 million buys.
Oh, man. When was the last time they did over a million? For Connor and...
Yeah, Connor and Nate with Holm and Tate. That was around 1.5.
I'm going to say yes. Yeah.
I feel this momentum is going to pick up. I already sense like such a big buzz for this card. In particular, I think Lesnar really puts this over the top.
Yeah.
And
Pre-Lesnar, I don't...
I wouldn't have put it over.
Yeah, but post-Lesnar, I really do think so.
I think he's adding, you know, 200,000 buys. I would be safe in assuming. I think there's a lot of interest with his addition to the card. All right, we now go to the Law message board. We got a bunch of feedback here for this show. We start off with Christian Small. I'm not the biggest MMA fan, but I have seen Lesnar Mir before, and UFC are kind enough to post that fight on their YouTube channel for free. I didn't realize Brock was such a dick at times in the UFC, but that's part of his appeal, I guess. He's a big monster who doesn't care about much. Having said that, his attitude was probably the best part of that fight for me, as his post-fight comments were just hilarious. I do have a question for you guys. Do you think Brock has more of a chance than most in UFC because of his name?
Of course.
Yeah. I mean,
he wouldn't have been signed
if it wasn't for his WWE background.
The guy's a guy that large and that physical, like he might have anyway. He certainly would have been signed at some point, but would he have received the title shot that early? I definitely don't think so.
Today it's a different world in terms of who they sign. 2007, when they announced his signing, You take out WWE and he's just an amateur wrestling champion? True. I don't think they're signing him in 2007.
Or with a win over...
There was controversy if they should have even signed him then because of only having one pro fight. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was criticism with the WWE background. Anyway, that's his thought.
We go to Joe, who says, one of the few UFC DVDs I own. This card was incredible from top to bottom. From the H-bomb from Dan Henderson to Lesnar getting his revenge on Frank Mir and then cutting the ultimate heel promo. This event lived up to the hype. Question, is the UFC in the same trouble as WWE, where they have to call up their former headliners to get a huge bump in their buy rates? Also, will UFC 200 get more Bison 100? We talked about that. But, John, do you think the UFC is relying too much on older talent?
I don't think so. I mean, there's some of that now with Lesnar and a possible return of George St. Pierre, but you do have... I mean, the future of Ronda Rousey is very much in doubt. Conor McGregor, I think he's someone that is going to be around for a good amount of time, and I think he's at a certain level where even a second loss to Nate Diaz is not going to erase this guy's drawing ability. I think they're in a pretty safe spot at this point in terms of stars, but beyond Conor and Ronda, then your next level of star is a John Jones, and there's a distance, and maybe Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz, you could argue, is the third biggest star in the UFC at this point.
There was sort of a period prior to Conor and Ronda where, you know, you kind of lost your Brocks and your Chuck Liddells and kind of that old era, where I feel like there was a bit of a big drop in star power. And we could potentially head towards another lull like that again if those two don't kind of have a resurgence. But right now, I'd say they're doing very well and almost in the peak of it all still.
Next up is Sergey. Lots of people picked that Dan Henderson knockout over Bisping to be the best in UFC history, but for me it's not. It could have been, though, if he didn't drop the follow-up shot. That was horrible, and he admitted that he saw Bisping was already out, but did it anyway to shut him up or whatever. Everybody hates Husamar Palhares, and rightfully so, but to me, bouncing one's head off the ring for no reason is just as bad as holding onto a knee bar, perhaps even worse. Again, I'm not a fan of the follow-up shot, but there's a difference between... following up when the ref has not instructed you the fight is over versus a guy holding on to a submission and ignoring the official who is tapping and basically having to pull you off when a fight is over. I will always say that is worse than the Dan Henderson one. And you can believe Dan Henderson or not, he stated after he was joking about his comment to Rogan, but it was certainly, there was definitely an issue between the two, and you could definitely have said he could have simply just walked off and that fight would have been done.
We go to Ryan from Calgary. It is interesting that there are three guys 7 years later from UFC 100 that are scheduled to compete at UFC 200 as well. Jim Miller, John Jones, and Brock Lesnar have all taken vastly different paths to get from one show to the other. Miller has probably peaked, nearly getting a title shot on a couple of occasions, and also throwing up a very impressive catalog of really exciting fights against high-quality opponents. He was on the undercard on his way up to UFC 100, and now he's on the undercard on his way down at UFC 200. This was the last time John Jones appeared on the undercard and the second-to-last fight before his first main event. He has improved leaps and bounds from the tentative and cautious fighter that was still several classes above Jake O'Brien. He has gone on to become one of the best fighters of all time and is now the main event of the largest card in UFC history. Lesnar had nearly reached the peak of his career. Okay, this is like a really great article for Fight Network.
The bio.
And the brochure. Maybe not for this. I'll end with this to say. Big shows like UFC 100 and 200 are a perfect example of the link between pro wrestling and MMA. They are the biggest examples left of the big top carnivals of old and the best circus in town. I give this card 8.5 out of 10.
DG Mitchell. First of all, guys, please don't hesitate to do more UFC reviews in the future. You do have fans of both UFC and WWE. Great to see the UFC's production improve as a whole, from the editing to interviews to voiceovers, while John Jones and Bisping have also vastly improved their skills. So many fighters from this show either have retired or disappeared or just not improved at all. The Belcher fight was fight of the night for sure. For nostalgia, given the week that it's in, it's a fun show to look back on. What was the deal with the Lesnar fight not going on last? We explained that. Why did or does Brock choose to not train at a more established gym like TriStar or Jackson Winklejohn, where he could learn so much more? What needs to happen for Brock to fight again if he wins convincingly against Hunt, which I think he will? I mean, Brock Lesnar has his crew around him, his trainer, Marty Morgan.
The guy doesn't like to leave home.
No, he brings his guys to him and trains on his own. I think if he really had wanted to at the time, I think he could have gone away and trained overseas in his striking. But he was never interested in that. And he had a lot of success doing things his way.
Yeah, look how far he's gotten just kind of relying on a lot of his natural abilities. And I don't think he will ever be kind of desperate or dedicated enough to have to live in New Mexico, you know, for an extended amount of time. Montreal, maybe. He's a honorary Canadian.
That's where he made his main roster debut.
Montreal?
Night after WrestleMania 18.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant the UFC.
No.
Yeah. Well, we go to Jonas from Hamilton. Gotta say, I hated the UFC at the time of UFC 100. The culture around it was simply the worst. Affliction and tap-out shirts on every jock with a tribal tattoo. Becoming a fan of the Law and its various shows in recent years has given me a new appreciation for the sport. I never miss an MMA report, and I've watched every UFC pay-per-view for about a year now. I even signed up for Fight Pass to watch old events, so thank you for making me realize that not only is wrestling not just for the unintelligent, but UFC isn't just for the meatheads. A few points from this show. First fight was incredible. Do you agree Alan Belcher has the worst tattoo you've ever seen?
Oh, I'm sure I've seen worse. A few tramp stamps in MMA as well.
Oh, man, yeah. Who's the guy with the...
Gray Maynard has one.
Yeah.
Brock has one.
Tramp stamp?
Brock has... He has, like... It's not, like, the full-out wings or anything, okay. But there is... Like, he's got, like...
Josh Berkman has the worst.
Josh Berkman's tramp got a bad stamp. One, too.
Secondly, any idea why Yoshihiro Akiyama struggled so much in the UFC after coming from Japan, even after a move down weight classes? What's your opinion?
I mean, he was older at that point for sure. And I think it was also the talent level, too, that he was fighting.
Something to be said, though. I don't recall ever moving to him ever moving to the U.S. to do his training, right?
No, he never did.
And I think there's something to be said about, you know, kind of keeping yourself in Japan and not experiencing the higher level of training that's available to you elsewhere. Dan Anderson is a scumbag, especially after admitting he did that on purpose. Crazy, we could see a rematch 7 years later. Blah, blah, blah. Brock Lesnar is my favorite and always will be. Gotta love a good ass-kicking heel, and he's the best at it. The middle fingers to the crowd, the Coors Light, he's just awesome, so entertaining. Really can't see Lesnar not getting knocked out Saturday night, but I'll be cheering for him anyway.
And final one is Vivek from India. I was on the SureDog forums at this time, and everyone was so confident that Brock was going to lose badly and how Frank Mir was going to school him. So the meltdown... among SureDog readers, was hilarious. To be fair, Frank Mir looked great after destroying Big Nog at UFC 92, so it wasn't that far-fetched to think how Mir was the favorite. I'm sure John probably covered the countdown show. The countdown was amazing, especially when the door just flies off after Brock gets pissed off at Steve Mazzagatti. It was a great build-up, and Brock was spectacular as the pissed-off monster who wants retribution and wanting to slap that mustache off of Mazzagatti. I missed the countdown shows as it was always the best TV of the week from any company at that time. Thanks for picking an MMA event after a long time. I'm expecting more to come. I mean, they still do the countdown shows. And the 200 one, in particular, the stuff on Jones and Cormier, is excellent. Hmm. So you can check that out this week.
I feel like a lot of that audience, though, has kind of moved on to the embedded, which maybe are a bit more they're obviously a bit more immediate. They take place right during the week. And they're actually shorter, less kind of generic, you know. More you get to see the fighters kind of outside of the typical sit-down interview setting.
All right, well, that's going to wrap up our extensive review here of UFC 100. This was a fun review to do, I thought, Wei.
Yeah, maybe in UFC 300 we'll review 200.
Man, at the rate they're going, UFC 300 could be within a few months. It won't be, but we will be at UFC 200 this coming Saturday. I don't know if Wei and I will be, if you will hear from us before next week, but we will be back for Review of Raw next Monday night. And for Review Away next week, we are getting closer and closer to the draft. So we thought it would be appropriate to go back and review the March 25th, 2002 edition of Raw, 1 week after Brock Lesnar's main roster debut.
Wow.
And it was the very first draft with Raw and SmackDown. So that will be the Raw we review, a two-hour Raw to review.
And this is available on the network.
This is on the network. March 25th, 2002, for the very first draft. So that will be our review for next week, which you can catch at liveaudiowrestling.com. We've got all of our shows up this week. The MMA Report will be a show from Las Vegas. I don't know who's going to be joining me, but probably plenty of people in and around the city. And then, of course, we've got the Law Sunday night coming off of UFC 200. And then again, we're back Monday night with Review of Raw. So that is all for us, folks. And we will speak with you next week on the show.
Time to end this suffering. I need a minute to myself. You will never get to me. What can be done out to myself? Image of myself.